The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back to our third hour. As we head you home, we've got Sam Stone. Sam Stone has been with us the past couple of hours. It's a delight to have you here, Sam, for an extended period of time. Sam is the host of his own radio show, heard here every Saturday morning at 9 a.m., Breaking Battlegrounds, 9 a.m. on 960 The Patriot right here. And he is a political consultant in town. You can follow him on Twitter, X, at Sam the Paul, P-O-L. And what I love about you, Sam, among other things, is that you're a polyglot in public policy. You're focused on a lot of different issues of public policy. I think we first got acquainted when it was issues of municipal politics. And then, of course, we did a lot of work on the housing stuff and the homeless stuff when you were working with the Kerry Lake.
I think the first time we actually was on transit stuff.
Was it transit?
Around the city of Phoenix. What was that, like 2018, 2017, somewhere like that. I mean, we've known each other for longer, but in terms of like the actual
it could have been
engaging
transit
on policy.
Yeah, I know. It might very well have been. And you were working with Sal DiCicco at the time?
Yeah,
that
and
right?
That's when we were deep into that discussion about expanding the light rail system.
That's exactly right.
And we were looking. We had the ballot initiative to try to roll that back some. You had a big discussion on the council where they ended up getting rid of the line that would have run north through Paradise Valley.
God knows.
That was the dumbest idea anyone's ever had. Well, no, it's not, because we're talking about government. So there's lots
there's
of dumb.
A lot of dumb ideas.
There's a lot of dumb out there. But that was stupid. Like, I don't think anyone thinks a line, a light rail line running through Paradise Valley makes sense.
But urban issues, I don't know. I don't mean this to be wrong, but it seems to me urban issues seem to be your focus, whether it's crime or whether it's homeless, those kinds of things, the bread and butter city municipal kind of stuff.
It's where the rubber meets the road. And look, I tell people all the time, I was more of your standard consultant before I worked with Sal DiCicco. You know, I did a lot of campaigns. I don't know if I've actually told the story on air here. Which is a funny story about how I got to work for Sal, is we took his campaign.
Do it.
And one day I'm in Georgia for a special election doing some work for the NRCC on turnout there for a race between John Ossoff and Karen Handel, replacing one of Trump's nominees. And I get a call from Sal and he's like, I need you to hire me three more people today. And I at this point, I've got like six people out gathering his signatures. He only needs like 500 signatures. I think we were authorized to get 700. So I'm like, no, I've got six people. They're not making any money, like 100 signatures each. They're not making any money, Sal. And he's like, no, you don't understand. I need you to hire three more for me. And after this goes back and forth, I get the deal that Sal is at Disney World with the kids. and Sal, pardon me, he listens sometimes, I know, on this show, but I did not know at that time that Sal has a long reputation in his many years of service of being brutally tough on his staff. Like, he went through staff like wheat chaff. And it wasn't a bad thing. I learned he was just really – you had to be 100% on top of it 100% of the time.
Okay.
And the minute you slacked off from that, he was going to get rid of you.
Okay.
And he had fired his entire office staff.
Oh, okay.
And so – I'm like, what are you talking about? You can't have not have an office. You're in the middle of your campaign. You're with your family at Disney World. Someone's got to answer the phone, Sal. And he goes, yeah, I know. That's why you got to hire me three people. So I go out and I start calling around like all the people I know here in Phoenix who might qualify.
Yeah.
And he's fired them all. I mean, the guy's been in office for 17 years at this point, right? And his longest lived chief of staff made it 9 months. 9 months. And so I call around and I call him back at the end of the day. I'm like, Sal, you fired all my friends. He starts laughing. He goes, yep, I do that. Okay, but you got to find me someone. Hangs up. So I spend a day trying to do it. I can't find any. Finally, my business partner, Chuck Warren, and I look at each other. He's like, you got to go do it.
Yeah.
You got to go into that office. I thought that was like torture, right? I'm like, I do not want to go work at the city of Phoenix. I like campaigns. I like elections. I like what I do. man, it turned out to be the best thing that's ever happened to me. And Sal is the best teacher you could possibly have ever had. Because I found I have an enormous passion for this. And what I didn't understand fully, which I think almost nobody on our side does because they don't – we've almost been wiped out at the municipal level, Republicans, except in suburbs and that sort of thing. How all these federal programs dictate and interact right. with your local government
right.
is astounding.
Right.
So much of your local government is dictated to by now by the federal government.
Right.
People would be shocked to learn just how much.
And let me highlight this for just a second. Let me hang a lamp on this. I know the education world. You have education as a state responsibility that gets federal subvention. And about 90% of the education dollars are, in fact, state generated in any given state. But about 50% of the bureaucracy is federal.
Yeah.
For example.
That's a perfect example. And it's absolutely 100% relevant to everything that happens with transportation, with housing, with your roads, with your policing, with your drug treatment and substance abuse programs, with your law, with your courts, over and over. Everything is dictated now from that level. And that to me was kind of a revelation. I didn't realize, and I don't think most people on our side realize, how much the federal government controls your local government. They do it with the purse string. Right. They say, listen, if you want to build
and
a
regulations,
road,
the purse string,
and regulations, if you want to build a new road, it has to meet all these federal requirements in terms of now you've got to add a bike lane and you got to do this and that and the other. And then we'll give you 30% of the money for it. But it's more than 30% more expensive because of their requirements. Mm-hmm. The local government says we'll take the money. When the logical response is to say, well, since this costs us more than you're offering, we're going to say no to all of that and just build a road. But we don't do that. Housing. We talk about housing crisis all the time, right? Building subsidized units that are double and triple the cost what it takes to build the nicest units anywhere, in any city. So I can go build in Beverly Hills. I'm talking about the actual construction cost for less than the city of Phoenix is spending on low-income housing per unit.
Right.
And the reason for that is all the federal interference and requirements. I have to have – you look at those – every project at the city, whether I'm talking about like repaving a street or building an apartment block for low-income apartments or whatever it is. One of the conditions is that I have to have a certain number of partners in that who meet definitions of racial minorities,
so
sexual minorities,
female,
all this.
Many, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So instead of a contractor, Kiewit or whoever, bidding on I'm going to build that road, I have a bid that comes with 17 different prime contractors on the front of it. I'm going to pay, as I do with everything, double or more what it would cost me in the private sector to do this. And nobody, this was the shocking thing, nobody at the city, nobody stopped to ask, well, why don't we just not do this? Why don't we just say no to all their stuff and do what makes sense? You've seen all over town them tearing out new at intersections. They're tearing out the ramps.
Right.
Right? The concrete ramp down to the street.
I didn't understand.
You've seen them all over town doing that, right? What that is they changed the ADA, not requirement, but the ADA preferred design for those ramps.
Oh.
So it went from the ones where it's like board type lines, you know, that are textured and all that, to now where you have the little metal balls on top of it, like it's, you know, a highway divider almost.
Uh-huh.
But that was a change. Theoretically for the visually impaired, right?
Yeah.
It was unnecessary.
Right.
I mean, it may be a nice improvement, and you could easily say going forward this should be the preferred new design. But instead then this federal program comes with this money, and they say, here, we're going to give you 50%. You match it, and you tear out all your old ones that were built in the last few years that are brand new, that are perfect, that have no reason to be replaced. You do this. And the government goes, yes, yes, we're going to do that. And they contract it. Why? Why? To spend money.
Right.
Because so much of the purpose of local government is spending money.
Yeah.
so much the purpose of government is spending money, and better if it has no result.
Sam Stone, gosh, that's great. I didn't know where we would start this hour. I want to stay with this. I want to stay with municipal stuff, and I want to stay with the cost of contracting with the government. And I want to say, I want to focus on something you said in passing, which might be the most important thing you said, about what a great mentor and teacher Sal DiCicco was to you.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I want to talk about that when we come back too. Sam Stone is my guest. Follow him on Twitter, X, Twix, at Sam the Paul, P-O-L. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. A little Huey Lewis in the news there. Walking on a thin line. I love those lyrics. Sometimes I curse the dark and I pray for the light. Sometimes the light's no consolation.
I can't even tell if that's a bass line in the back.
Yeah, it's a great question. I have a really good friend who is a really good bass player. He is a virtuoso bass player, Dimitri Sanis. He and his brother do that Birdland intro to my Top of the Hour. And I asked him about that. I asked him that very same question. He said it's a mix. It's a little bit of a mix of regular.
Okay.
I said, tell me what's going on with that bass line. He says it's a little bit of bass and it's a little bit of that Moog sample stuff. Moog probably, but whatever.
Right. So it is electronically enhanced, but there is an actual bass line in there.
Yeah.
It's a great.
Do it again, David. David, go in with hit it again so people know what we're talking about. Just start the. Yes, you're working for us. Yes, whatever else you're doing, we are bringing back AM Rock right here, Sam Stone and I, so people can hear what we're talking about. Can you do it? You can do it. I know you have the technology.
You have the power.
You have the power. Give them walking on a...
There.
There.
It's so brilliantly menacing.
Done. Yeah. Have you seen the documentary on We Are the World?
No.
Remember the song We Are the World?
Yeah.
There's a new documentary. It's fantastic.
Oh, I definitely want to see that.
You have got to 1985,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
The way they put it together, it all started. It was really interesting. Harry Belafonte goes to Africa, and he comes back, and he says to Quincy Jones, he says, why are all these white people helping black people and there are no black people helping black people? Interesting, huh?
Oh, that, yeah.
Kind of interesting. So they get all these people together in gosh knows, and there were only two people that wouldn't do it that are highlighted on the documentary. Madonna wouldn't do it if Cyndi Lauper was there. For some reason, there was a conflict.
There was a big thing between them. I don't know, whatever.
So Cyndi Lauper was on it. Madonna wasn't.
Well, okay. So let me just put there that Cyndi Lauper was a better singer. So
Yes. And as a musician friend of mine says, the person who usually makes the threat is the one who usually doesn't make the record.
Right.
So
that's a good saying.
And the other one who didn't show was Prince. And I think it had to do – it's not clear why – but I think it was a little bit of a Sheena Easton thing and a little bit of a Michael Jackson thing.
Michael Jackson, I get.
And the reason it came to mind was Huey Lewis is there.
Right.
And the whole time he's like, why am I here? He can't believe he's part of the crowd.
Huey Lewis and Kenny Loggins, if I remember, kind of like one of the oddball additions to that.
And they were great.
Oh, yeah.
And Huey Lewis is like, how did I get in here? But he was great.
You know, one of the things that obviously you know better than I do, but I've heard this from musicians is like, obviously it's a lot like athletes. They know who's special.
Right.
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 And then they don't care so much about anything other than they admire that special ability.
Right.
And Huey Lewis was actually a very special singer.
And his bands are fantastic. And as I told the audience, this is a genius.
Yeah.
800 math SAT got into Brown.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Just a genius.
Yeah.
And started a little later in life, but he's like, how did I get in here? It was kind of.
Oh, that's great.
You got to watch it.
I'm definitely going to check that out. Because that's, for folks who haven't seen it, it's been a while. A lot of people don't maybe remember. But it was mind-boggling to see all those stars.
40 years ago, Sam.
And I remember some of the MTV interviews they were doing. And, you know, it sounds like they were just having a blast.
Yep.
in having that collaboration with all of them. And
it's an incredible event.
And I don't know if the documentary touches on this, but I know that there were a huge number of collaborations on albums that came out of that.
That's right.
That a lot of those folks ended up doing work with one another.
That's right. They were all in town in L.A., I guess it was, for some awards show. I don't remember if it was the Grammys or something, but some awards show. And they said, okay, as long as we're all here, we'll just go over to the studios. I think it was Herb Alpert's studio or whatever it was. And we'll just all go over. And then Quincy Jones put a sign at the top, said, leave your egos at the door. And most of them followed it. And it was a hell of a production.
Amazing.
Anyway, Huey Lewis got us there. Can I just focus on something?
The Sal thing. I don't know if you want to go back to that.
You were working for Sal, and you said, never a better mentor, never a better teacher. You know, you and I mentor a fair amount. I remember volunteering with one or two of your campaigns, and one of the things that impressed me most is how many young people volunteered to work with you. And I think you and I kind of see the pay it forward or pay it backward kind of thing the way we were treated.
It's really essential.
Right? It is. Not enough happens that way, but it takes also a requirement not only of the person like yourself or myself or whoever the mentor, but it takes an inquiring mind and an interested mind to want to do it too.
It does. You know, the thing is, Democrats do, frankly, a much better job of this than we do.
Okay.
One of the things I've said for years is one of the weaknesses of our campaigns is that when a Democrat campaign launches, it's generally with very experienced people. People who are new to it are working in very, you know, low-end starter roles, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that they take their people at the end of their campaigns from all their various campaigns and they move them into political jobs that they control. Uh-huh. And then they move them back out into the campaign world. If they're any good, obviously. If they're not, it's a different story. But if they're good, they keep them and keep growing them and develop them. Yeah. So by the time you have someone running a congressional campaign, they've run two or three lower level campaigns as a campaign manager. Mm-hmm. They have worked on congressional Senate campaigns. They've worked on six or eight campaigns. Now they're very experienced and know what they're doing. They know what buttons to push and how to work the system. Our version of that is we get done with a campaign. We cut our kids loose. We tell them good luck. Yep. You know, here's 15 days pay.
Yep.
And if they're around, maybe we'd hire them again. But of course they're not, because a year later they've had to go get another job and do all this. They move them into their offices. So they move the people that have an interest in policy go into that. The ones that have an interest in advertising go for some PAC in the meantime. They keep their people employed and they groom them and they develop them. Now, I know they're good at grooming lots of things, and I don't, you know, there's plenty of that that probably goes on.
Easy on the double entendres here.
Yeah. but they are much better at developing talent.
Yeah.
We do a terrible job. We cut our kids loose. We do not treat campaign workers right on our side of the aisle. And then we don't take them and move them into those office positions and educate them in the policy aspect and how government functions.
I want to come back on the way we also professionalize these things to a fairly well at our discount. I have seen so many state races where people from other states move into a state for 9 months on our team. I don't see that with the Democrats. I want to talk to you about this. When we come back, we are the world. Okay, young David, thank you for that. We'll be right back with Sam Stone. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Sam Stone is my guest. He's the host of his own radio show in his own right every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Breaking Battlegrounds. You can hear it right here. He is a political consultant in town. You can follow him on Twitter, X Twix, at Sam the Paul. We're just talking about campaigns a little bit. Republicans do it, I think, differently than Democrats, but maybe not in some respects. One of the things that was new to me, Sam, since I moved here, is I've noted that a lot of statewide campaigns, senatorial, gubernatorial, some congressional, but more in the senatorial, they have these campaign consultants that come in from other states.
Yes.
That work here for about 6 or 8 months, and then they just go. I remember the first one I encountered on a statewide campaign I was managing was brought in. What was your last campaign? Oh, I ran the New Mexico governor's race. Really? And you know Arizona? Yeah, we can do it. almost as if it's a cookie cutter thing, almost as if it's a journeyman baseball thing. I don't know that I love it, but maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, no, you're right. You're not merely – you're not wrong at all, Seth.
And then the minute they lose the primary, they jump over to Ohio or they jump over to Florida.
It's terrible.
You've seen
this terrible.
Too.
No, this is okay. This is a symptom of the problem I was talking about in the last segment.
Okay.
So Democrats have built up in every state and every city, they've built up a base of operatives who are operators in that location who know the land, who know the people and know the players. They know the politics, and that's – and we don't. We cut – you know, we cut our people loose, and so we actually end up spending more. I mean, we end up in a really inefficient cycle where our candidates are paying a lot more for these people who fly in from other states, do that for 9 months. Everything's cookie cutter. You know, Jeff Rowe, who's probably the leading Republican consultant in the country right now, it's not probable. He's basically lost everything except Ted Cruz. He was Martha McSally's consultant.
He's lost everything but Ted Cruz and a lot of money, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. No, he's made a fortune.
Right.
I mean, you know, talking about being the first billionaire consultant potentially, right? But there's like he played a small role in Youngkin's PAC, but it wasn't a lead thing. He won Cruz and McSally initially, but then lost both the McSally Senate runs. He's basically lost everything. And yet this is literally a $1 billion firm that gets called in on all these races. They charge a bundle.
Yeah.
So we pay more.
Uh-huh.
We get less. Mm-hmm. And it's because we don't have the loyalty to our troops that Democrats have on their side. It is a major failing in our campaigns. I have tried my best. The Sal thing, you know, I took a lot from Sal. I also gained a ton from him. And one of the things, you know, that I did before that, and really he helped codify for me, which you hit on, is that I try to bring in on every campaign I'm doing, I try to bring in a couple of smart kids, find a couple of local smart Republican kids. I give them responsibility. I coach and nurture them through their learning curve as best I can. And then I work to try to get them jobs and opportunities after the campaign. And that's come back to me tenfold because a bunch of those people have ended up bringing me in for contract work and other things that I do. But more importantly, I can point to nationwide about 24 young people who are in this business, who are effective, good operators, who I helped give them their start and get them going. And those, you know, that it's like a minor leagues, right? You're building your bench, you're building your next team, you're building your future. And a lot of those folks are going to go on and have very bright futures. Some of them may run for office themselves someday. We don't know, but I mean, we do not do that. And it is a crying shame. And Democrats do.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I disrespect the most in this business is the Lincoln Project type people, the sellouts, right? Seth, I have had numerous opportunities where I have been straight up offered very large sums of money simply to betray the Republican Party and move on.
Right.
Our lack of loyalty makes those offers far more attractive than they would be otherwise. Now, I'll never take one.
Right.
That's not me.
Right.
But too many of our people are taking those offers because we don't stand behind them.
Did you watch that documentary, the documentary on the Lincoln Project?
Yeah, I did.
It's disgusting.
Oh, yeah. They're gross. It's the whole thing.
It is gross and disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And abusive.
You know, look, selling out the Republican Party pays a lot of money.
Yeah. You bet. All right, we'll be right back. Sam Stone is my guest. Follow him on Twitter, X Twix, at Sam the Paul, and check out his show every Saturday morning, Breaking Battlegrounds, heard right here on 960 AM The Patriot. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I want to put in a word for our event on Tuesday, March 26th, Fighting for Freedom. We're bringing in the great broadcaster and thinker Mike Gallagher. Brandon Tatum and I will be on stage with some other special guests at Arizona Christian University. We still have tickets left, thanks to Y-Refi.
and they're underwriting so much of it. General admission tickets are the lowest price we've ever done, ever charged for an event. So you can get your tickets at 960thepatriot.com. We also have VIP tickets available. Young David will be there. I'll introduce him around to y'all. Most people have met me. They haven't met you, David. You're the curiosity.
It's your face and all the branding.
Yeah, but you're the curiosity. No, you're the curiosity. People always like to meet the producer. It'll be great. So we hope to see you there. 960thepatriot.com. Please check it out. Sam Stone is my guest, and he and I have been the beneficiary of great mentors and great teachers. And it's rare in our business and rare in our profession to find one. And it's, I don't know if it's just as rare, but it's close to just as rare that there are young upstarts that want a mentor and a teacher, right? And when you find that combination, each should hold on to each other for dear life. I have so benefited from this, as you have, you with Sal and me with some others.
Yes.
But the encouragement to young people that I want to convey is find one. Find a mentor, please. Find a teacher, please. Well, you don't know it all.
And it does take humbling yourself a little bit. But to be a good mentor also requires humbling yourself quite a bit.
Yep.
And being willing to listen and understand that there are times that that young mentee is going to be right and you're going to be wrong. And that's the greatness of a mentor-mentee relationship, is that it's not something that benefits just one side.
Did Sal tell you, as mine told me, if I'm ever wrong, let me know?
Yes.
Yes. Right?
Oh, right from day one.
Right.
So one of the things people don't realize, people thought Sal and I, especially at City Hall, they thought we were like neck and neck, tight together on everything. One of the secrets of our relationship is twice a week, Sal and I would have a knockdown, drag out, screaming fight with one another. And the minute's over, Sal's one of his true areas of greatness. The minute a fight is over, it's done and gone.
Right.
And there's no rancor
left. Right.
We had it out. You won, I won, doesn't matter. We're moving on. It was one of the most important relationships I've ever had, because I learned he had a trove, 17 years, a trove of knowledge of the city and how it worked and how this worked. And he understood politics in a deeply. And so I was able to really develop from that, but also to help him develop from that. Right. And to make him a better council member. And I try that with every young person. I want them to take the reins and run.
Yes. I remember, Sam, this is a story I didn't know I was going to tell. You called in one day. You weren't a booked guest. You just heard something on the show. You were listening and you called in and.
I am a listener. I mean, for folks out there, like, I am a regular listener of the show because I really like we're very simpatico.
Yeah.
I like your brand, but I like your insight.
Well, you were working for Sal at the time, so this would have been some years ago. And I'll never forget the call. And I introduced you. I said, Sam, you're that Sam. You're Sam Stone. You're Sal DeCiccio's chief of staff. And we talked for, 8 or 9 minutes on the call. I don't remember the issue. And then the call after, we went to a commercial break. Then I had a call after you. And the caller said, why does a city councilman need a chief of staff? And I said to the caller, without missing a beat, how many city councilmen's names other than Sal DeCiccio do you know?
It's a good point.
And he couldn't answer it.
It's a good one.
The necessity of understanding you don't know it all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The humbling of that.
I would actually, one of the things that I think actually limits our legislature and makes them less effective than they should be is the staffing situation. Yeah. Because they share a single staffer for multiple members.
Yep.
So basically, it's just a live answering service, maybe some scheduling help, but you don't have the collaborative relationship and the private collaborative relationship that, for instance, Sal and I had. I think it's deeply necessary. I think we do a huge disservice to the state of Arizona by not giving a budget for each member of the House and Senate here to have their own individual staff. Now, it shouldn't be huge, right? I mean, we kept our staff at – people don't understand. The city of Phoenix, relatively, in terms of its budget and spending and capacities and all that, is about half of the size of the state of Arizona, right? State of Arizona has a governor, nine department heads. We'll have a lieutenant governor coming up, 30 senators, 60 House members, all this. Then all the elected offices, the AG and treasurer and so forth. City of Phoenix has 8 council members and a mayor. That's it, right? So I actually did agree the amount of constituent work you do, no council member, if you're doing it at all. Some offices don't bother, frankly. But if you're doing it, no council member could keep up with it. That was a full-time job for about 1.5 people, full-time, just to stay on top of constituent service issues. Do not begrudge government the right people. Begrudge them the wrong people.
Yeah, right. I agree with that. I mean, I've done a lot of work in this city with faith organizations. And whether they were in Sal's and yours district or not, every faith leader, church, synagogue I interacted with that ever had a problem, you know what they always said?
Call Sal.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yep.
Sal will help you. I said, he's not your counselor. Call Sal. He's not your, it's not your, call Sal.
Yep. Yep.
That's something. He gave a damn.
It's a big deal.
He gave a damn about the city.
Gave a damn. And one of his things, I mean, day one when I went in there to work with him, was he said, listen, we get constituent services right. Now, we're not gonna blow smoke. We're not going to tell you we can do something we can't do. We're going to tell you the truth, right? Like, I had a guy who wanted the city to have vehicles running around picking up loose trash off the side of the road.
Right.
Like, I'm sorry, we don't have anywhere near the manpower, the capacity. That was never going to happen, right? So we'll tell you that. That's not possible. Guess what? You have permission. Reach down and pick up that can, take it to the nearest trash can, throw it in it. Thank you very much for doing so. If there's someone dumps a truckload of garbage on the side of the road, then call us. Then we'll come out there. But at the end of the day, constituent services are what government should be about. That's the primary purpose of why you're there.
I go running on weekends with a mutual friend of ours, Ann Atkins.
Yes.
And we run, and there's some certain pothole. She goes, every time I run by this pothole, I think, if only Sam Stone were on the city council.
Oh, that sucker would be filled.
Let's take a quick break. Sam Stone and I will be right back. Portions of this show have been brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. They have a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not tied to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. If you're worried about the vicissitudes of the market or the Fed, you don't have to with YRefi. With YRefi, you are in control. You can turn your income on or off. You can compound it, whatever you like. There is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. You obviously always get a monthly statement with no surprises. And with YRefi, there are absolutely no fees. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com. Or give them a call at 888-YREFI-24. And thanks to them, they have made our event on March 26th, next Tuesday, Fighting for Freedom with Mike Gallagher, Brandon Tatum, myself, and some other special guests, the lowest priced event we've ever had. So go to 960thepatriot.com for your tickets for that. We have general admission and VIP tickets. Sam, I want to thank you for spending your afternoon with us. It's a special treat. We can close any way on the show that you want, but I think, you know, when we think about the next generation and kind of the last few segments we've been focusing on mentor-mentee relationships, and the next generation and the future of our state and the future of conservatism or the Republican Party here, it's really incumbent on our political leaders to bring up the next generation. I don't know who your first employer was in politics. Do you know who mine was? This will surprise people. It was 1982, and it was Fred Duvall.
And I was working for the Bruce Babbitt campaign as a little volunteer. And I remember seeing Fred walking around in his socks with running his hands through his hair,
right? Yep.
Cringing over the budget. And I said, that looks like someone interesting. I want to be like that. Well, we ended up in different places, but I still remember him. That's the point. I still remember him.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember mine. It was back in my, you know, dirty Democrat years. Yeah. So my first actual job in politics, and I didn't obviously get to know the principal, was 1996, the Clinton reelect.
How fun.
That was, you know, I was state opera, you know,
yeah,
grassroots stuff, how doing fun, all that kind of stuff in Oregon. And, you know, fortunately, I don't look back and think Clinton was by any means the worst president we've had in my lifetime.
Well,
so.
Adam Carolla was making the point the other day that if you took an audience and just gave them a speech of Bill Clinton's from the 90s and asked them what party this represents.
Oh, that's a Republican.
He said that's what the Republican Party sounds like.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Sam Stone, thank you for being with us. David Dahl, thank you. Mr. Bill, thank you. Teresa, thank you. All of you, thank you. Until tomorrow, I am Seth Leibson on behalf of Sam and everyone else. God bless you all, and class is dismissed.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.